Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, everybody out there in Radio Free Mafia Land. This is your host, Wayne Klingman, with a redo of the show I tried to do earlier with the good-looking, very fantastically cool Sophia D. Probably the world's best expert when it comes to everything Gene Hollow. So-and-so.
Oh.
The ghost of Howard Hughes himself has come back from the dead. Do as much disruption as he can do because he knows how much we hate him after we discuss his horrific actions towards the guys of Hollywood. Good evening, ma'am. How are you doing today?
I'm actually doing pretty good. How are you, Wayne?
I'm doing well. Now, just so you know, we have two witch doctors, a high priestess from the Boy Lady religion base down in Mexico, all working their magic to prevent Howard Hughes' spirit from interfering with the show.
Yeah, that was quite an event last time there.
Yeah, yeah. And we're referencing the fact that last time we had this beautiful person on talking all great things about Gene, that we had all kinds of sound issues. And we tried to do some technology to beat these sound issues. But, you know, Howard Hughes is a vindictive kind of a spirit, and he's trying to go and give us hell when he can. But we hopefully everybody can persevere because this information that we have here about Gene is so worth it. Anyway, so let's get into it. Now, how did you come to discover the goddess Gene Hollow?
Well, I kind of grew up around classic films in general, as a lot of people did. I started out looking into different actresses such as Lauren Bacall. I got interested in just the general concept of old Hollywood actresses at first, and it took me a little bit to discover Gene. But when I did, I was like, wow, she's just known as the platinum blonde, and seeing her acting, I really see a lot more substance here than what's being said. And that was maybe 3-4 years ago now. And it was just by chance, because my first film was actually Riff Raff, which isn't a famous Gene film at all, or not one she's known for.
I find that I came across Gene only because in later in life I discovered the glory, which is silent film and pre-code film, right? So
yeah.
I lived most of my life without knowing of her existence. I feel bad because the more I see her in films, the more I read about her very interesting, very in some ways tragic life story, the more I have a drawing towards her and what she had to go through.
Exactly. I feel the same way. And like you said about pre-code films, that was really her golden era. And the fact that I kind of started out with one of her crappy later films was interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, thing is, in so many ways, I feel that pre-code films take the cake away from the stuff that Hollywood would have used today.
Exactly. I feel that same way, too. That's a good way to put
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just amazed. But let's talk about Gene. Now, I did not know until the first time that we talked that Gene wasn't really drawn to acting. It was her mother that had to push her into it, right?
Exactly. She, when they first came out to Hollywood in 1923, it was after Gene's mother had divorced her father the previous year. Gene's father, not her own father, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But when she came to Hollywood in 1923, she had some alimony money in her pocket and decided that she wanted to be an actress, which didn't really work out because she had already hit 30, which is the magical age you're never supposed to hit in Hollywood. So it was a few years before Harlene prior to Gene got into acting, and then once she did, really pushed her.
Right. I mean, if it wasn't for her mother, Gene probably never would have set one foot in a stage.
That too, and her friend who dared her to go in the first place, because it actually ended up that it was a dare. Her friend Rosalie Roy was an actress at Fox Studios and had no car at the time that she was supposed to show up for an appearance, and asked Harlene at the time to drive her. And that was solely how she was even seen by movie executives at all, was just in the Fox parking lot.
Wow. Tell us that whole story, please. Most people may not know it.
All right, yeah, from the top, well, I mean, they were both just, Harlene was married to Charles McGrew, and he was very rich and wealthy. She didn't really have much to do except be a socialite. So what she was doing was hanging around with other, you know, venerable young women of her age. And one of these was Rosalie Roy, and she was just a bit player. She would go into central casting. And at this time, she had an appointment, but she didn't have a car, and Harlene did, because she was married to a big rich guy. So she asked Harlene for a ride down to Fox Studios, and so she was like, all right, I'll take you. She did. So they went down to central casting, and when Rosalie Roy left the car, she came back out with some movie executives who were looking at Gene. They didn't care about Rosalie all of a sudden. They wanted to know who the platinum blonde in the car was, and begged her to come in and dictate some letters of introduction or whatever, and she was just, nope, nope, nope. They went home. And later on, I totally cut you. I paused, and then I went to start again. Look at me. But
I apologize.
It's fine. Rosalie Roy actually dared her a few days later to go back in and capitalize on that. I think it was a $250 bet that Gene claimed in some articles, but there's really no way of knowing that.
Wow. I mean, again, here she did the thing, walk in, this is do it, right, do the bet thing, and then she was going to let it go, but her mother kind of got some phone calls and made her, correct?
Yeah. It was when she was at home, she had completely kind of forgotten about it until she got a call, Harlene, asking for Miss Harlow. There wasn't a Miss Harlow at this time because she had just signed in using her mother's maiden name. I neglected to mention this part. She did go in and signed in briefly and just signed as Jean Harlow as a joke. It was her mother's maiden name. She was very close to her mother, so I'm just assuming that was why she did that on a whim. So Central Casting called her back a few days later, and she had no idea who Jean Harlow was until she goes, oh, all right. And she didn't go. Her mother found out, though, and was pretty shocked and decided, no, you need to go. You need to capitalize on that. And they pushed her, and she did, even though her husband wasn't very happy about it.
Right, but her husband has a lot more things to start bitching about in a quick hurry, because her mother, Jean's mother, made her get a divorce.
Yeah. She, Jean's mother really wasn't happy with the whole thing in the first place, considering they had eloped when Jean was 16. It was really a control issue between Charles and Jean's mother here for the 2 years that they were married. And eventually, Jean's mother just decided that they needed to separate, and she worked on just breaking up their relationship. She even went far enough to make Jean have an abortion.
That is incredible. I'm a big... I need to be careful here. I'm a big sucker for Hollywood gossip. I absolutely love it, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I hear this sort of thing now in today's day and age, and I think, my God, they're crazy people. But to think that poor Jean, you know, was forced to do something horrific like that, I'm assuming that she probably wouldn't have had the child, right? That she did it for her mother, so her mother could be the ultimate stage mom?
Yeah, Jean really had no will for herself. Like, she said in a few articles about herself that she, when she gets angry, she doesn't voice it. She'll just pick at her fingernail polish with something she said she does when she's angry. And that was something that really dominated her whole life, up to life-changing operations. If your mom wants it, then she was going to have it because she was too scared to speak up for herself and wanted to be loved, which is understandable.
Well, I can get that. I understand the concept is of I have to do what my mom wants me to do or my mom won't love me, and my mother's love is the most important thing to me, far more than my husband's love, so much more than what might be with this child. My mom comes first, last, and always.
Exactly. You know, that reminds me of a quote that Jean was at an awards or a party when I think it was 1934, and she goes on stage and thanks her mother and God. And a screenwriter, who I don't remember at the moment, goes, why'd you put God last? She didn't speak to him for months.
Well, times. But yet, Jean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jean, in her early days of working for the studios, did not have anything more than a good reputation of being a good actress and basically a good woman, right?
In the beginning, could you repeat that? I didn't hear the middle of your question.
Sure. In the beginning of her days acting, she only had a really good reputation of being a good actress and a good person.
Oh, no, she did not have a good reputation at first. She exploded to be famous, but really only as a sex symbol. It was
really,
she was gorgeous. Yeah, well, she was simultaneously just panned and just revered, mostly by other women, I think, for her looks a lot, which started the platinum blonde craze. That was really the bulk of her fame at this point, not so much acting. Howard Hughes relentlessly was publicizing her. There was really no way she could have escaped, at least someone knowing who she was.
Oh, Mr. Hughes is a piece of work, which we're talking about more. So, as we talk about Jean's early career, what types of movies was she first put into?
Very sleazy, sexy pictures, one of which it's not even preserved, Goldie, which isn't, it's not even out there. That, I think, was probably one of her worst roles. She was thrown into, not only were the roles bad, but her directors were pretty bad, too. They didn't take her seriously because they were just someone that they got loaned out from Howard Hughes. He did not make another film, obviously, after Hell's Angels in the same time period. And Jean was the only actress under contract to him. So he was making easy money loaning her out for films at the same time he later loaned her out for personal appearances. She was making maybe $500, and he was making $2,000.
Let me make sure I understand something correctly here. I get the concept of loaning someone, an actor out for a film, that for a fee you can use this actor here and there act for you. When you loan someone out for personal appearances, do you mean like we're going to go to Joe Blow's party and be there and wave at the crowds or stuff, or do we mean something else?
Well, Howard Hughes signed with Lowe's Theaters, and that was the chain she appeared at. She appeared at every Lowe's Theaters, who was MGM's parent company. I think this had some Paul for an influence. I'd have to check. But she appeared solely at Lowe's State Theaters everywhere from Ohio to Pennsylvania to Manhattan. And she didn't even have an act. The guy sent her out here without an act, and they had to hire NTG, Nilsi Granlund, to write a speech for her. But she ended up collapsing in Pittsburgh because she was so nervous and she didn't have an act and was so embarrassed at what she was being made to do.
Which basically show up to a theater, make a speech, say hi to the crowd, maybe shake some hands, get a photograph, and go on to the next event, correct?
Exactly. And one of these acts was the MC or whoever was there would drop a napkin and have her come up and pick it up, and everyone would go, ooh, which I'm sure is humiliating. She was only 19, 20. Like, why would you? That's really humiliating.
Yeah, I guess they weren't saying, ooh, because the woman was just showing up picking something up. I'm going to assume that she dressed for the part of bending over and picking something up.
Oh, yeah. Her wardrobe was provided by Howard Hughes in the contract, and mostly from the pictures, it's just a lot of really form-fitting satin dresses.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're obviously going to have all the young men there, maybe older married men there, looking at the girl and making catcalls because that was the thing to do.
Exactly. She really did not have a good time. And she tells about how she would just camp out in her hotels because she couldn't even step outside without people wanting to cut off locks of her hair and stuff.
Wow. That's intense. I didn't know that. So literally, they had people, and what year, what we're talking, the late 20s, early 30s?
This is December 1931 to about April 1932 is when she did a six-month stint touring the eastern United States.
And so she set out her hotel room intentionally, and people would be there trying to get a lock of her hair. Maybe she's trying to steal a hat or what else they might be able to grab and run off with.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's funny because when you put it into context, this is really pre-Beatles. It's like the first, like, people didn't know how to act. If they didn't know how to act now, they really didn't know how to act then. They were just waiting for her outside the hotel, which people still do, but not as intense. Like, she was noting crowds of 200 people. In 1933, she went home to Kansas City, and there were literally hundreds of people waiting outside her grandparents' house. And she had to take a bath in the dark because people were looking in her bathroom window.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I've read about, if I would read about something like that in the paper today or online, I would definitely believe it was going on. To think it was going on in the 30s is mind-boggling.
Yeah, I could really see into the public eye there. Like, I mean, these are the first years of talkies and the first years of people with really interesting voices and personalities on screen. It isn't just silent. This is a whole new advent of film.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And you have this platinum blonde sexy girl. Let's go see her.
Yeah, let's see the sexy girl. Yeah, and I suspect that depending where she was, the theater location she was going to make an appearance at, they might not have been referring to her as sexy girl. They might have been referring to her as something not so nice, which is unfortunate.
Exactly. And, you know, not only did these newspapers publish the theater she was performing at that week, but they'd also note what hotel she was staying at a lot of the time, which was useful info for some people, but mostly a lot of creeps.
Right, because unlike today, where you would hope that people would know better, so we could discuss that, in the 30s, I would take it as a matter of fact that they would know better, because protection of the woman, you know, the protection of the home thing, the home idea, to me, it was paramount, but not so much, huh?
Oh, definitely, yeah. By March, she was still in. She was making circles. She was going from New York to New Jersey to everywhere else. She went back to New York, and by this time, she was escorted by two police officers from New York, from NYPD.
Thank God. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Now, how did Miss Howlow get along with Mr. Hughes?
Not well at all. She certainly didn't voice it and left a lot of the complaining and please let me go from this contract, I'm going crazy, to her mother, because she had the willpower to say that. But she really felt used. She told anyone who would listen, I really don't like what I'm doing. I don't like being loaned out for these films. I don't like the image I'm projecting. And she would, towards the end of her contract, she was sending telegrams every day to Howard Hughes, who just wouldn't even answer them.
Yeah, but now the question I had that I did not bring up earlier when we were off air was my number one site that I get my Hollywood gossip from, which is called NTNT, I think is how it's pronounced. Said the other day in one of his got a little short blasts that he believes that Howard Hughes had her husband killed. The one that committed suicide,
that's
supposedly?
That's an interesting concept. I'm not sure if I'm on the same boat. I see the thought process there, but I mostly think there's a whole other story to it.
Okay, we've been told he committed suicide for an unknown reason. Okay, because he had alcohol problems, perhaps. He was depressed, perhaps. And he has access to firearms, and sometimes that combination is not a good thing. Some people believe that his ex-wife found out where he was, had problems of her own, and decided to kill him and then kill herself. The theory that Howard Hughes had him killed and covered up that crime is a new one on me. Why does potentially Howard Hughes have him killed make any sense to you, ma'am?
I'm not sure if it does, but if it did, I'd say maybe because Howard – I just don't really think I subscribe to this theory very much. But then again, I haven't listened to the episode. There's probably some very good points there that I have not thought of.
It's just basically he reveals a blind. He talks about something he mentioned, and he talks about who he was talking about when he mentioned it. It's not very – he doesn't go in depth at all. I would just guess from the – topics in general he was talking about that time, that he was talking about people who were assholes. Howard Hughes, in my opinion, because we don't like him, we know that he doesn't like us. Howard Hughes was not a nice person.
Oh, no, he was not.
You know, it's been suggested that Howard Hughes suffered from syphilis, untreated syphilis at that, and that might have led to him going insane later in life.
Oh, boy, yeah, definitely. That's, yeah, general paralysis of the insane is what they used to call it, so.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And again, to think that Howard Hughes had the best medical stuff he could get, money can buy. I thought about his best action in the world, but you know, you had people like Al Capone who had good doctors too, and he had it, and they couldn't get rid of it. And that's what he went insane from. Could have happened to Howard Hughes? Sure. Sad to think that because of Howard Hughes' relationship with many other actresses, that some of them took really over-the-top precautions because they're scared of him having syphilis to give it to them, right? To think that this insane person might be doing harmful things to Gene is disgusting, but even then he was a very, very rich man, and who was going to do anything about it? Certainly not Gene, certainly not her mother.
Oh, could you repeat that, just the last part of that very quickly?
Sure.
A little bit.
And again, let me apologize to the audience. We seem to be having the same, but not as bad, audio problem as we had before. We're blaming this on Howard Hughes because we've been talking bad about him. His spirit is interrupting the communication. I apologize for the situation. We have witchcraft actors fighting Howard Hughes on a spiritual plane, and perhaps they're not having very good luck. But we'll persevere
well,
to continue
to be.
The best.
Didn't he own the Institute of Technology or something? Like, he owned some technology institute. Maybe he is getting into the phone lines.
It would make sense. It would make sense. I mean, Howard Hughes, and it's not a show about Howard Hughes, but Howard Hughes played such a big role in Jean's life as an actress.
Oh.
How long
sure, yeah.
did she get? How? I'm sorry?
Oh, I just said for sure. I was agreeing with you.
Right. How long was she stuck working for him?
Well, from 32 when she was. I forget exactly if her contract was broke beforehand because I didn't note that, but I know that she was signed to MGM in April 1932. So, no, yeah, it was in March 1932. That was it, was when MGM formally bought her contract off of Howard Hughes. But the POS, like, wouldn't sell it at first and kept upping the price, and Louis B. Mayer was finally like, okay, take it. Take the money. Take the money. Just leave us alone.
Yeah, that was the situation in the day. I mean, it was not easy to be an actress. It was hard enough to be an actor. It was not very easy at all to be an actress because we know for a fact that more than one studio had used the pool of actresses they had as a personal harem, for lack of a better word.
Definitely. It was actually Paul Byrne who was the driving force in Gene's separation from Howard Hughes, which does make sense there. But I really really do think that Dorothy Millette just kind of came from New York and murdered him. That's what I think personally. Have you read Deadly Illusions by any chance?
No, ma'am.
It's written by Samuel Marx, who was actually there. He worked for MGM. He was a publicist, and he was there the night of. And he just shares his thoughts. And I'm not 100% subscribed to everything he says in the book, but I do take a lot of what he says seriously because he was there.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes a really good point about Dorothy and Paul Byrne and the key witnesses that not only saw a mysterious woman at the pool that night, but there was a woman's pair of shoes left by the pool. They heard laughing with Paul Byrne. I think maybe she came to try and reconcile and things maybe went wrong.
Right. I mean, we would later find out that she killed herself, right? I suspect that she had problems before she went to L.A., and definitely those problems, and in fact that perhaps she did kill her husband, perhaps accidentally, might have driven her over the top.
Oh, she very definitely had problems. She was actually put up in a sanitarium by Paul Byrne, which was why she was still his common-law wife, because they were separated, and I'm sure he did leave because of her issues. She was very, very ill. But he personally paid for her lodging in a sanitarium. And there's still a whole bunch of mystery as to how she got out, how she even came to L.A. That's all lost to history, a lot of it. But, yeah, he was keeping her.
Right, and perhaps I can see scenarios in my own mind where Howard Hills knows she's out where she is, can help her get out, maybe agitate her in some fashion, make sure she gets a gun, and let nature take its course.
See, in that vein, that could make sense. I can see that. See, at first,
yeah,
it's like when you just see it first. You have to really get deep in this. I'll have to listen to this episode.
Yeah. It is about Jean, all about Jean. But let's talk about more nicer things about Jean, some more of her highlights of her great career. So she's away from, she gets away from Howard Hughes, thank God, right? What's her next step in her acting career? What's she doing now?
Well, her first film with MGM, which was rumored before she was signed, it was a lot of Paul Burns' influence that got her into this, was Red-Headed Woman, 1932, which also happens to be one of my absolute favorite Harlow films. It's just genius.
Outstanding. A question that appears on my screen, by the way, is can they find Redheaded Woman online? Is it on YouTube or something?
Oh, yeah. It's not. I think it's, you can just find it on Daily Motion. I know it's on there. It's on. You can get it anywhere on Amazon, DVD. It's widely in release. And, yeah, it's online in pretty good quality. That's how I watch it, even though I own it. That's how lazy I am.
Interesting. So, in your opinion, what's your best film?
I think, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, I think it's a perfect tie between Red-Headed Woman and Bombshell. I think Red-Headed Woman shows a lot of initial spark and promise, and just the dialogue, she handles it so well. Bombshell was her masterpiece in a lot of other ways, in the same ways as well. She mastered it, and it's a mirror of her own life. It was basically written for her. It was initially written about Clara Bow, that Victor Fleming directed it, and he had a little fling with her, and he was very moved by Clara's life, so he ended up writing Bombshell. Those are the two films that I really think highlight Jean's career, and I think are the best, and I think a lot of critics would agree with me, so I really don't have a weird opinion about what her best film is, because my favorite films of hers are her most popular.
Right. I mean, I can see why. I mean, I think, again, for the time, even today, she compares very, very favorably to some of the people they tell us are stars, like, oh, let's say Kristen Stewart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Because if I had a choice between watching Kristen Stewart or never watching another movie in my life, I definitely would choose the latter.
Could you repeat that? I just didn't hear you.
Sure.
It's not any fault of my ears.
And I was just talking the fact that I think Jean Harlow is an excellent actress, and compared to some of the actresses we had today, and I named Kristen Stewart as one of them, her acting is so far above that acting, it's not even comparable.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And it really sucks that she had to go through so many initial bad films, because she really was just molded badly. I think if she had a director who really took an interest in her from the beginning, we would have had a much better Harlow from the year she appeared on film.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, she dies tragically very young. How many years was she able to act outside of the influence of Howard Hughes?
She was only able to have, really, I guess she died just after the fifth anniversary of her MGM contract in June. And that's really sad because, you know, just a few years later they had all the MGM reunions, and you can see all the Myrna Loy and all the other people looking all cute and frizzled, a little older. And there's just a spot where you would want to see Jean.
Yeah, her death is very tragic. And let's not go on her death, because it's very, very tragic and very morose. Let's talk about some other good things about Jean. I understand that she had a thing for dogs, as in she really liked a certain breed. Can you talk to us about that?
Oh, yeah, she has. Her favorite dogs were wire-haired terriers, and that went as far as she even had a little portrait of a wire-haired terrier on her charm bracelet that she wore. And that charm bracelet still exists, and it's in the Hollywood Museum. I think the exhibit, the Harlow exhibit's closed now, but that little wire-haired terrier still exists. I know that.
Wow. Another question, interesting. We know that she was, at least when she started, she was living on the fact that she divorced her husband and she had that money. Was she able to go and was she able to go and support herself from her acting afterwards or no?
Yes, she definitely had a leg up with the alimony, but the problem was she found most of her income being drained by greedy Marino Bello at first, her stepfather, and her mom, who really was just mooching off of her for the rest of her life. But by the time she died, her estate really wasn't as big as they thought it was. They actually thought it was going to be upwards of $1 million, and I think it was only a couple $100,000.
Because other people had taken so much of it?
Yeah, but she actually also took I'm not too big of a fan of him, and we can talk about that another time. That could be a whole episode. But Bill Powell ended up giving her some very good financial advice to where she invested in life insurance policies and stuff, and a lot of her money was just in policies. And that ended up being really good for – that was the only thing that saved her. Otherwise, her mom would have just eaten up all her money.
Oh, wow. Oh, right, because how – if your mother has so much control over you that she can force you to divorce your husband, can force you to have an abortion, right? How can you ever possibly stop her from taking money?
Exactly. I mean, she bought the whole, Jean Harlow's white mansion on, it was in Beverly Hills. She didn't even really want that. That was just her mother's, like, let's move into this mansion and paint it all white. And in some articles, she says, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, we have Ermine, can't pronounce that word, wraps on the toilet seat. It was ridiculous. Her mother was just spending all kinds of money getting the best things money could buy in Hollywood. And Jean, it took her years to stand up and just to move to another house against her mother's wishes.
Right, because if mom loses control, she might lose that access to cash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They had a really, really strained, really weird relationship with so many dynamics, and it's so weird and psychological. I think her mom had a form of monk by proxy, almost.
I wouldn't doubt that. I mean, when you read, I know that she was good friends with Clark Gable, and perhaps I'm reading a little bit more between the lines than it's intended to be, but Clark Gable was very concerned about Jean during the last few years of her life, correct?
Oh, very, very much so. And he noted that she really wasn't looking good on the set of Saratoga. And I don't think he really, he's pretty aloof. I don't think he noticed too much in the years previous, but by the month and week preceding her death, he was noticing she just looked horrible. He came to visit her and noticed that her breath smelled of urine, which is a very common symptom of kidney failure.
Yeah, yeah. But who, other than telling Jean you should see a doctor, what could he do? I mean, I guess now today he could call the police for a welfare check or something, but back in the day, that wasn't possible, was it?
Yeah, no, he didn't. Everyone just kind of kept their distance, really, and it kind of sucks. Really, the one who cared the most was Myrna Loy, who had a doctor check her pulse at a party under the guise that she was checking a bracelet. She had a doctor go up to Jean and just check her pulse and oh, what a wonderful bracelet, slip his two fingers underneath and noticed that it was very irregular. And Myrna told Jean, you need to take better care of yourself, but she would just brush it off constantly. Just, no, I need to work. And she was so adamant on that, I think people really noted how stubborn she was and kind of gave up towards the end of her life on trying to get her help.
Sure, because from my own experience, you can only tell someone they need to do something for their own good and get ignored, and sooner or later you're going to shut up because all you do is waste your time.
Exactly. Jane just didn't care about herself. She was depressed. She felt used by William Powell, especially towards the end of her life. She was ending a relationship there. She felt used by her mom. Her maid noted towards the end of her life, there were suddenly a lot more yelling matches between her mom and Jean. There was a lot more clash. And I think really she just, like, was too dominated. She couldn't handle it. She really just gave up at the end of her life.
Sure.
It really sucks.
Depression. Sure. I can't imagine the amount of stress that the poor woman was under for most of her life. That stuff builds and builds and builds, and you put depression on top of that, especially untreated depression, yeah, pretty soon you give up. Pretty soon you simply don't care.
Exactly. Not only on top of that, but you have a diet of she would eat just carrots and, like, orange juice in the morning. I have a list of her diet she did. And then she also had to make 4 films a year from, you know, be up at 5 a.m. and come home at dinner every day. And then have the same people who you're coming home to dinner for be like, where's the money? What else can we buy with it?
Yeah.
It's
horrible. I need this. Sadly, even today, that continues. I mean, we both read in more than one account of some stars, especially children's stars, which are horribly taken advantage of by parents. Even those laws that exist to protect them, sometimes they don't work out too well.
Yes. Yeah, especially at MGM. They're one big culprit there of just abuse of stars, in my opinion. I feel like they personally killed at least a handful.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's interesting what even things that happened in the 20s and the 30s in some degree happen even today, which is truly, truly heartrending, especially when we, some of us, give so much sway to what people in Hollywood want us to do, want us to think, want us to, you know, act, how to vote, stuff like that. I mean, some of these people can't walk across a bridge without a set of instructions, but that's neither here nor there. Now, where can we find you online?
Well, I do have a blog at Harlow Heaven. I can spell that if needed, but I think it's pretty self-explanatory. .wordpress.com. I need to buy my domain. That's how we are over here. I'm also under the same username on Twitter, Instagram. I don't use Facebook because that site's creepy. But pretty much everywhere else, Harlow Heaven. And if you'd like some non-Harlow-related content, I do have a personal Twitter and blog at Vitaphone Zone.
Interesting stuff. Interesting. I mean, I absolutely love Jean Harlow. As we're only briefly touching on some of the more known aspects of her life, why don't you discuss some of the things that most people don't know?
Well, let's see. She, off the screen, she just really never wore makeup. I think the most, like, she really didn't like being the platinum blonde either. And it's so proliferated in popular culture that she was the sexy platinum blonde, you know, dinner at 8. Or how about all of the quotes online that I see, you know, I'm trying to think of one of her fake quotes right now. Like, every morning I wake up feeling a new man. All of those are fake. All of those are fake.
Yeah.
And they're all just either from Irving Shulman's book from 1965 or they're rewritten Mae West quotes. And a lot of her real quotes are just unbelievably smart. And I've been working on putting them together for, like, a blog post or something so people can actually read what she actually said. With sources.
Yeah. That'd be nice. I mean, to know, I would like to know more about the real Jean Harlow, other than the packaged Jean Harlow that history wants us to consume.
Exactly. You know, this is one tidbit that really sticks with me that you'd think would be more popular, but Ben Lyon, who was her co-star in Hell's Angels, he was very good in that movie, I think, just off the record. But he noted that on the set of Hell's Angels, every day she would come in with a book bag over her shoulder with about 5 classic novels, maybe 6, Shakespeare novels, big, big reader, not messing around, like big stuff. And he noted she would just sit down and read.
Good. Right. I guess it's nice that she was that type of a person. Now, excuse me. In your opinion, should she have been able to live past her illness, do you think she would have had a more successful career as time went on in Hollywood?
I think so, yes. There's some rumor which gets perpetuated by, you know, really bad publications like the Daily Mail that her career was ending and it was failure and that's why she died, which absolutely wasn't true. Saratoga was going to be scrapped, but the general public was so upset over that they rallied MGM to have it released. She was really at the most popular point in her career when she died, and had she lived, I think she might have moved more into her own, maybe moved into film noir in the 40s. I would have loved to see her on television, on game shows. I think she would have found her own. She was definitely finding freedom from her mother at this point, and right as she was coming into her own, it just all came crashing down.
I know that her mother gets a lot of blame for Jean's death, and I think we might be able to blame her mother for helping Jean become so depressed in aspects of her life. But her mother's religion had nothing to do with Jean's death, did it?
No, not at all. She used it as an excuse, and she was dabbling in Christian Science, but it had no actual effect on Jean's death whatsoever. She was being seen by doctors from a few days after she was off the set. Not the day of, sadly, because she went to Bill Powell's house instead, but her mother was at Catalina Island, that's why she didn't go straight home. But as soon as her mother got home, they consulted doctors. The only thing she didn't want was loss of control over her daughter, was because she had Jean set up in a little hidey hole in their house, and she didn't want her to go to a hospital and not be in control of her medical care. So when people were calling in, day out, begging for her to take Jean to a hospital, she ended up saying, "We are Christian Scientists." No. And that really was a lie.
Right.
It was just her explanation instead of saying, "No,
right,
I need to be controlling this situation."
Because heaven forbid she goes to a hospital, gets better, right? Gets a few days away, gets her friends and other people that she knew with her, giving her advice, giving her perhaps a rescue away from her mom, and there goes her money drain.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see Jean's mom standing in a hallway and watching her daughter getting wheeled away by physicians and her just thinking that and saying, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm going to be there every second.
I'm going to be there every second. And sadly, it's just horrific that people do that. But there's no excuse for it. It's heartbreaking to think that happens. I'd rather think of, you know, Jean Hello taking a weekend off someplace, having a nice time, having her dogs with her, you know, having tea with someone that she, you know, and reading a book by the beach, which is like how I like to remember Jean Hello.
That's how I like to remember her, too. I'll share a better story if we have time here.
Oh, we have more
than
enough
time. Time?
We are.
Oh, of course. Here. I forget. There's so many columnists who interview her all the time. I'd have to have a file brain to keep them all in my head. But one interviewer from 1933 met her and decided, you know, hey, we should go out to dinner. And she was like, no, I'm not really into the whole dinner concept. I think we should get hamburgers with extra onions. And that's what they did. They just went down to a little hamburger shack, and she was in her slacks, and they got hamburgers with onions. And he said it was like one of the most easiest, down-to-earth, just funny interviews he'd ever done.
That's very good. I mean, the thing that Jean Hello, how do we put this? Because I'm a guy, right? I like the image of Jean Hello as a bombshell, right? The sex appeal. I mean, yeah, I admit I'm a guy, right? I get that, right? I also think that be it Jean Hello, be it Marilyn Monroe, be it James Mansfield, there's more than the aspect of them as a person than what the studios or their marketing people or their PR people would want us to want to believe.
Exactly. I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah. Now,
it's,
if you want to read more about...
Go ahead.
If we want to read a good basic biography of Jean, what would you recommend?
The number one I'm going to recommend is going to be Bombshell by David Sten. I would take it as not so much through his lens because the book is amazing, but it does have still a bit of a male lens there. No offense, but if you take it straight up with all facts, it's wonderfully sourced. Sten, he talks to people who have never even been asked about Jean Harlow. He's the one who had her medical records unsealed and did the initial research to break the rumor she died from bleach going into her scalp. That's the number one I'm going to recommend.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for recommending that book. Yeah, that's something that, old man, in the 1960s, my sisters started wanting to dye their hair blonde. And my mother wouldn't let them do that. She mentioned the fact that she thought Jean Harlow died of that. So,
well, it certainly didn't help, but it...
No, I'm sure it didn't help, but again, that's how rumors get started. Yeah, that's how rumors get started. That's how they keep on being said. That's how they get going on, is that people believe them. They don't know the difference. They repeat what they hear. You know, I heard that. That from
I found the first article blaming bleach for Jean's death, and it was from a quack doctor in 1937. I think someone found that article and ran with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do that all the time. I mean, how many times... When it comes to the death of Hollywood people, be it Gene Hall or Michael Jackson, you name the person, that sometimes the rumors of their death far outweighs what really, truly, tragically or not, actually truly happened, right? And it's
exactly.
It's important that we know the facts, because not that anybody I know of today is going to run out and gather her planned, right? But it's nice to know what really, truly happened, so we don't. Sometimes when we believe the myth and help that continue, we're not really doing anybody any favors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, most of these horrible things. Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something. I keep interrupting.
No, please.
Oh, all right. Most of these rumors, all of them, 99% of them can be traced back to Harlow, An Intimate Biography by Irving Shulman, which I do not recommend unless you're looking for the source of these. But he said in his later years, he never apologized for it. He said, "Yeah, I don't care. That was for the money, and I got what I wanted." So, Irving Shulman, everybody.
Wait, there's also Hollywood Babylon. Are you familiar with that book?
Which book? I just zoned out a little bit.
Hollywood Babylon.
Oh, yes, I own both of those, and God, is that a pile of crap. I like them it's like watching a car crash, how I like to rate them.
Yes, and he knew at the time he was lying through his teeth, or took a little bit of truth and really twisted it around, but that, even today, sometimes if we have the choice between reading something with the facts or reading something that we pretty much know is made up lies, we go with made up lies because it's more exciting.
Exactly. And people value pretty pictures and easy words over hard work and research and stuff that takes a little brain power. If it's easily understandable, it's going to be popular.
I mean, people want to, I'm trying to think of a good example. That's not way over the top example, and it's hard for me to do that. I mean, I want to know, I like Hollywood gossip. I do. I'm a horrible human being, right? Horrible human being. I love Hollywood gossip, right? But
I don't want lies. Don't worry.
You know, I don't want lies. You know, if my guy says something's going on, something happens with Prince Harry and his wife, right? I want to believe it's true. And if I go and look into it myself, which sometimes I do, is the difference between a fact that one can interpret different ways, or something that got twisted and twisted some more, and the knife ran through it a couple of times to make somebody look bad or evil or nasty. Because that doesn't do anybody any good. But sadly, that's a lot of the books that Hollywood superstars tend to be.
Yeah, it's really, I think the Hollywood biography has really only come into something respectable in recent years. It's just been a bunch of trash throughout the 60s, and now people are finally doing work to restore the careers of people who've been smeared their whole lives. And I think in the 90s it really started with like the reformation of the Hollywood biography, when they started releasing their memoirs and stuff. But yeah, before then it was just anyone who had a fact or a secondhand statement could write a book and get it published. Because no one cared. No one wanted to research movie stars. They were just movie stars. They're not academic. But now it really is. It's historical.
Yeah. And people, and I think that people can more easily, I don't have the truth, but people, I think, when given the facts, want to know the facts. So, yeah, I want to know, when it comes to Gene Hollow, when it comes to Jane Mansfield, right, I would like to know the facts. Because both of them, even Marilyn Monroe, the Three Dead Blondes, with that, you must remember that this podcast is a great, great arc on, right? Yeah, some parts of their lives were scandalous, there's no doubt about it. Some of it was tragic, and some of it was just like you're in my life, right? There's no need, in my opinion, to take something and twist it into shit. But I apologize to use that word. But let's see who there.
You're
so
good.
I do thank you. I do want to thank you for coming back on. I do want to thank you for helping me fight off the spirit of Howard Hughes. I know I'll be double locking my door and getting out some salt and garlic tonight because he may invade my bedroom.
I'm taking my man down to the graveyard, and I'm not going to bring him back.
There you go.
That's hilarious.
There you go, please.
Frankie and Johnny, which is from a Harlow movie. There we go. That's deep.
There you go. Well, I do thank you for all your time. Give us the location of your blog one more time, please, ma'am.
All right. If you want to go on my blog, it's harlowheaven.wordpress.com, and I am Harlow Heaven on social media platforms as well.
Yay. Well, again, I do thank you. And for the next few minutes, we'll be fighting off the shade of the evil Howard Hughes. And with that, everybody, you guys have a great night, and we all will talk to you soon. Thank you all so much, for everybody, for listening. Bye-bye.